and get ready for the racing weekend.
Checker flag!
It's Chasing Checkers with your host, Chase McCabe, on Nashville's best sports talk,
ESPN
102.5 The Game, and the Game Nashville app.
And welcome into Chasing Checkers live at the Daytona International Speedway here in ESPN 102.5 The Game. I'm Chase McCabe hanging out with you this Saturday morning. You hear the race cars in the background. It is all presented by Social Furniture on Charlotte Avenue. Shop local, shop social. And Backyard Blues Pools. Appreciate them for coming on board to helping us with our coverage here at the Daytona International Speedway. We have a great show lined up. And again, we'll be at our normal time slot tomorrow at 8 o'clock in the morning. You'll hear from some different people that we will talk to. But coming up today, just to give you a clue, A.J. Allmendinger, driver in the Xfinity Series. Clay Greenfield, who is a Clarksville native, driver in the Truck Series, going to join us. Ryan McGee of ESPN. Steve Post of MRN, just to name a few. Even got a couple of ARCA Series drivers that are going to be coming by. Because on tap today at the Daytona International Speedway, you got the ARCA Menard Series. Can't wait to see them in the Xfinity Series, which what you're hearing is qualifying right now. They will run a little later on today in their race. And then, of course, tomorrow, the Daytona 500. This will be my third one seen live. Cannot wait for it. Who is going to win? And it's also the official debut of the next-gen car. We saw that Thursday night in the duels here at Daytona. It was pretty timid, pretty laid back because of the supply chain issues and not wanting to wreck these things. But looked pretty good. You know, from a speed standpoint, I think it takes a little while to get a run. They're still trying to figure that part out. But Kyle Larson going to lead the field to green. He's on the pole. He did that the other night. Alex Bowman will roll off second. So Hendrick sweeping the front row at the Daytona 500 once again. And then Brad Keselowski won duel number one. Chris Buescher won duel number two. So that is the first four cars, followed by Austin Cindric, Michael McDowell, last year's winner, Ryan Blaney, Harrison Burton, the rookie, Chase Briscoe, Kyle Busch, rounding out the top 10. Chase Elliott is 11th, to give you some other notables. Martin Truex Jr., 14th. Bubba Wallace, 16th. Kurt Busch is 17th. Joey Logano, 20th after a wreck. William Byron will be 23rd. How about Greg Biffle? Coming back after a five-year absence, he is going to be in the Grambling State University Chevy. He qualified 28th. He's in the Daytona 500. Good to see the Biff back here. The three-time Daytona 500 winner, Denny Hamlin, will roll off 30th. And Jacques Villeneuve, who is an Indy 500 champion, a Formula One champion, he's going to be in his first Daytona 500, rolling off 40th. So pretty cool there. Let's get this show underway. We've set it all up for you. Let's get to some of the guests. That's why we're here. Let's kick it off with some drivers from the ARCA Menard Series that will run a little later today. Drivers from drivers Rajah Caruth and Nick Sanchez. I mentioned it earlier, the ARCA Menard Series going to hit the track later on today. And we say hello to Rajah Caruth and Nick Sanchez, who are drivers for Rev Racing. Guys, welcome. How we doing? How are these high banks treating you?
Doing great. I feel like it's been treating us well so far, but you know, see how the weekend goes.
Agreed. It's been awesome to hear at Daytona International, and excited to get on the racetrack later today.
Yeah. So you guys were out there I guess it was Thursday, had a practice session, and your young drivers, you're trying to kind of figure this place out. Is this your first time here for both of you?
No, this is my second.
Okay.
It is my first time.
So what was it like, Rajah, the first time you went out there?
It was pretty cool. Like, I think for a lot of people that are young and that want to get into racing, right, that this is all you really want to do, right? And to be on the racetrack that you watch your heroes race at for years and years is pretty awesome, even if it's just in an ARCA car.
Rajah, who are some of your heroes?
Jimmy Johnson.
He's pretty good.
Yeah, just a little bit. Jimmy, Bubba Wallace, Dale Jr., Kurt Busch, Wendell Scott. Those are kind of my top five drivers.
Best of the best right there. That's pretty good. Nick, what about you?
I feel like growing up on the NASCAR side was Dale Earnhardt Jr., but then overall, I would say Ayrton Senna and Sebastian Vettel.
Okay.
More of the international racing side, but yeah, those three.
So yeah, Nick's real foreign.
So, okay, for you mentioned, you know, other drivers, but do you, is NASCAR kind of the goal, or you want to race all over the world?
You know, NASCAR is my goal. At this point, you know, I kind of chose that because I think the racing is some of the purest. But yeah, no, NASCAR is the goal. Obviously, I would love to try other racing at some point in my career, maybe at the end of it. But NASCAR is, you know, my goal right now.
So Rev Racing, you guys mentioned, you know, shaking it down yesterday. The ARCA Menard Series, and really any racing at Daytona, is so unpredictable. So how do you kind of prepare yourself, especially you, Roger, that's never been here before? You have Nick. Can you really prepare yourself for the unexpected?
I would say, yeah. Nick can probably answer that more after his plate experiences last year.
Yeah.
But I think for me, like, understanding that so much of it is out of my control, like just making sure I have all my ducks in a row and studying, relying upon the people I have in my network, and just making sure I've done all that I'm responsible for.
Yeah, I mean, kind of just what he said, you know, I feel like last year I came here trying to worry about everything as far as, you know, qualifying goes and racing, and it's so unpredictable in really any series, so you just got to do what's best for you. You know, if there's a run, take it. If there's a move you want to make, make it. You know, and I feel like that's what I did at Talladega, and at the end it paid off.
You know, obviously with the Cup Series, we're talking about, you know, the new car. This is the same car the ARCA Series has had for a while. How do they handle in the draft from maybe some other stuff that you've driven at other tracks? Like, what's kind of the learning curve there of handling the draft?
I mean, I feel like versus other tracks, it's very unique, this place in Talladega. I'd say the ARCA cars out of the top four series, you know, probably handle the best. I've never really had an instance where I've gotten loose. But there is a very big bubble, probably bigger than any other series in NASCAR racing here this weekend. There's a very big bubble, so I feel like that makes it very hard trying to time passes because you have to break out at the right spot.
What about you?
I'd say I'm obviously on the deficit of experience, right? But I think, like, I've driven an Xfinity car at a short track, right? But besides that, it's just been late models and legend cars. So this is the biggest racetrack I've ever been on. And I think these cars will drive fine, like Nick said. Like, you know, you can't really ask for anything better. I assume, obviously, in traffic, you'll have the nuances of dirty air and kind of getting manipulated by other cars. But I don't expect it to be nothing crazy. It's just, again, if I do what I'm supposed to do and manage what I'm supposed to manage, then it'll be fine.
We're talking to ARCA drivers Roger Carruth and Nick Sanchez here at Daytona from Rev Racing. So you two are teammates. You know how important that is at Daytona. So with practice and all of that, how much are you trying to get a feel to work together?
Yeah, I feel like practice, you know, we haven't actually worked together in practice other than the test, just because, you know, if there's an instance where, you know, our drafting pack in practice has a wreck, we both don't want to be in it. So we've been kind of separated there, but we got to work together a bit at the test, and I feel like, as we expected, it was very easy and seamless, so that's something, you know, I think we'll be pretty good at.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think so, too. Like what Nick said, like, we didn't test in a group yesterday, but I think tomorrow when we work together, it'll be just fine. Both of our cars are very fast, and Rev Racing has brought us some very, very fast Chevys.
Roger, you mentioned your background, short track racing and late models, and then some Xfinity Series cars. What's kind of been your journey to get to this point?
So my journey so far has been, I guess from a driver's perspective, I raced on iRacing for the past, since 2018, and that's really where I got noticed to be a NASCAR driver diversity program, and this is my fourth year in as a part of the team. I race legend cars, late model stocks, and been in the formerly K&N E Series, but now the ARCA E Series last year, and now the full ARCA Menard Series. So that's kind of been my path so far. It's been less than 5 years, right, as a driver, but I've been a fan longer than I can remember, and I've worked really hard, and a lot of people have helped me to get to this point, and I'm really thankful.
What about you, Nick?
Yeah, I guess, you know, my career path was weird. Most people probably don't know about it. Like, I kind of started off, you know, the first 4 years of my career, I raced road course go-karting.
Nice.
So I had never seen an oval for the first 4 years of my career. And in 2017, I made the switch to ovals and legend cars. And I guess kind of started my short track racing career from legend cars to late models around the southeast. And then eventually into K&N East for a couple races, ARC East, 2020, mixed with some ARCA, and then last year did the full ARCA schedule. and this year doing obviously ARCA as well.
What was the biggest difference in jumping into the full schedule and kind of how that was for you?
It was kind of weird because most people, I guess, might get an oval experience. I guess you could say maybe from dirt racing or, maybe an oval go-kart. But I got my first oval experience with my first time as well in a race car. So it's kind of like a double whammy, jumping from a go-kart to a legend car. I feel like, the differences back then, I guess you kind of saw them in my performance, but over time I feel like I got better at it and I still continue to.
Awesome. Well, guys, best of luck with the race, and it's good to talk to you and hope to see where your careers go.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Coming up next here from Daytona, we will chat with Steve Post of the Motor Racing Network. You hear him now on ESPN 102.5 The Game because we are your home from NASCAR. He's going to be roaming the pits all weekend. We'll talk to Steve next. Live from the Daytona International Speedway, presented by Social Furniture and Backyard Blues Pools, it's Chasing Checkers, ESPN 102.5 The Game and the Game Nashville app. Welcome back in, Chasing Checkers, ESPN 102.5 The Game. We are streaming on the Game Nashville app as well, live at the Daytona International Speedway. Speed Weeks, the Daytona 500, it's all presented by Social Furniture on Charlotte Avenue. Shop local, shop social, and Backyard Blues Pools. Appreciate their coverage. Pleased to be joined by Steve Post, a man that you hear on the Motor Racing Network, and of course now on 102.5 The Game because we're your home for NASCAR. He'll be roaming the pits all weekend long. And Steve, it's good to meet you. Good to see you. It's good to be in Daytona.
I'll tell you what, Chase, it is great to be here. That's for sure. You live in a great spot. You're in a great city with Nashville, Tennessee, but this time of year, Daytona is the place to be at. The place to be at with weather, but the place to be at as well with the great racing. And we're wide open here in Daytona. We're in the throes in the middle of Speed Week, and it's exciting. We appreciate the game, 102.5, and you guys carrying Motor Racing Network. More important than all of that, though, thanks to the listeners for listening. We couldn't do any of it, so thank you to all the listeners there in the Nashville area.
I guess the biggest, I was talking to somebody last night. There's always storylines that come out of Speed Weeks. Obviously, the one that was tailor-made for everybody was the new car, the next-gen car, and the fact that they don't know a lot about it. They're still learning it. They don't have a lot of them, so they're trying not to tear them up. We know Joey Logano, we'll see. Are they going to repair it? Are they going to go to a backup? They were one of the few teams that actually brought a backup to Daytona, which is unheard of with Speed Weeks and how things can happen. The duels were pretty tame. As we've compared to what we've seen in recent years. So that's the big one. Are there some other ones that you're watching?
Well, and I think that story is, you're right, that is the big story, and that story will continue to evolve. I thought when we look at that car last night, I thought we got our first stress test with Joey Logano to see how the car handles a crash at high speed at Daytona. As much as we don't want to do that, that's important. Yeah. It's important to see what the car does, and it looks like the car performed well from a safety perspective. I also think, and I think it ties into one of my other big stories, I thought in that first race, Brad Keselowski was right at the edge of aggressiveness. Ryan Blaney was right at the edge of aggressiveness. They really tested each other with a lot of bump drafting, a lot of pushing, and a lot of shoving. I was shocked at that because of the depleted inventory, the supply chain, and everything else. Which leads me to the storyline. We may have had other storylines, but Brad Keselowski and Roush Fenway Keselowski Racing said, "No, we're going to be the storyline," because not only did Brad win, not really a shocker that Brad won here at Daytona. He's good. He hasn't won the 500, but he's good at this style of racing. But then Chris Buescher comes back and wins the second race and was right in the hunt when Joey got twisted up. And, the reality of it is, I think Brad Keselowski has bullied his way into the conversation throughout the rest of this week.
Yeah, and it's interesting you bring that up because obviously a long way to go with it. Let's see what kind of races they win this year outside of the super speedways, how competitive they truly are.
Right.
But I go back to when Tony Stewart left Joe Gibbs Racing. Right. He'd won two championships there. Mm-hmm. It was the perfect setup for him. No reason that he'd want to leave except for he wanted ownership. He wanted to dip his toe in that.
Same scenario. You're right.
He walks into that building, and they become a championship-winning organization. And Gene Haas had been in the sport for a long time. But Tony Stewart brings ideas and brings sponsorship, which brings money and all of that.
Right.
Keselowski, it's different because Roush has won championships, has won races, and it just hasn't been the same in the last few years. So I kind of compare the two, albeit leaving the door open. Let's see how this year goes.
I agree with you. We do need to see how this door goes. But doing that comparison, and I think, Chase, you're right doing that comparison, Brad's walking into a better situation than Tony was.
Yeah.
You know, Roush Fenway is in a better spot now, even with the struggles of the most recent years, than Gene Haas was when Tony took that over. I mean, they went from a 35th place team to a championship contender. Roush Fenway is 10th, 12th, 15th place team, you know, so they're a lot closer to it. Now it's a different world. I understand it. So I agree with you. I think it's going to be interesting to see where Brad goes. I think these type of racetracks, he's going to be stout. And I do believe Brad Keselowski gets wins. To me, it's going to be interesting to see if those wins can come maybe on some intermediate tracks or some short tracks. I don't know the answer to that. Yeah. We'll learn more at Auto Club Speedway next week, and we'll learn more at Las Vegas the week after that in Phoenix, and we'll see where they stack up. But, you know, I think that the idea we're talking about Roush Fenway Racing winning races, and they're not fuel mileage races or strategy or rain call races, I think that's a good sign, and I think they're pointed in the right direction. Going to be fascinating. There's going to be good days, and there's going to be some bad days as well.
We're talking to Steve Post of MRN, the Motor Racing Network. They are the voice of NASCAR here at the Daytona International Speedway. Let's talk a little bit about the Xfinity Series,
yeah,
because I tell people that are new to NASCAR and jumping in, a lot of new fans are coming in, you know, what's some of the best racing? And I go, the Xfinity Series, because these are the young guys trying to prove themselves,
yep,
young men and women, trying to prove themselves and get to the Cup Series and race on Sundays. But there's a guy from Hendersonville, Tennessee, Josh Berry, who's a
man.
Great story. Short track racer. You get in with Dale Jr., it's not a bad gig.
Yeah.
And now he's going to run full-time in the Xfinity Series after winning two races last year. One is when he was a fill-in. There's a lot of talent in that series, which makes me feel really good about the future of the sport.
Josh Berry is one of the best stories in American racing. Not Xfinity Series, not NASCAR, American racing. Because he is the quintessential short track racer that has navigated his way without daddy's wallet or other methods, and I'm not faulting. If I was a rich daddy, I mean, I'm putting my kids through college. I'm doing the best I can do, you know. I mean, I'm not funding a Cup team, but, you know, he is a great story. But you're right, because – and the thing I really like about this Xfinity Series is you've got some of the veterans like a Justin Allgaier.
Yep.
And you're going to learn your craft from a guy that's been around this business for a long, long time and is just one of the pros. And, you know, he'll be a teammate over at Junior Motorsports. And then our reigning champ, Daniel Hemric, is back in the series.
Yep.
Going to be really, really good. Brandon Jones is another guy that's been around. So it's kind of really good because you've got some young talent, you've got some middle-aged talent, and you got some veteran talent. What it makes on the racetrack is some of the best racing. One of the things, I think the race length is very exciting as well. I mean, I love my NASCAR. I love all Sunday afternoon. I can watch cars go around a circle all Sunday afternoon. But these Xfinity Series races, yeah, 250 laps, 200 laps, 300 laps, 300 miles, they're a little bit shorter distance, which is a little bit bigger sense of urgency. And I just think they put on some great racing. I cannot wait to see what the Xfinity Series looks like this year.
You with Josh Berry, I asked Dale Jr. this last year. It was the day that they announced,
yeah,
he was going to run some of the Xfinity races. And I said, you know, your dad made you do it the right way. You had to go,
right,
buy your race car and build your race car and go race the short tracks. And,
yep,
you know, Dale Earnhardt could have funded your whole thing if you wanted to, but he made you do it the right way just like he did. Josh Berry has done
that. Same thing.
So he's very much a throwback racer. Ironically, 21 years ago today, we lost Dale Sr.
Right.
What do you think? You've been around this sport. What do you think he thinks of a guy like Josh Berry?
That's his kind of guy. It's his kind of guy. Blue-collar guy. Racer through and through, hardcore racer in the heart, in the brain, in the mind, in the soul, in the spirit, everywhere. He's a hardcore racer, and I think that is Dale Earnhardt's kind of guy. I really do. And so, because of the willingness to do the hard work in the trenches, the willingness to go mix it up at South Boston Speedway with some of the best late model stock drivers in America, and get your teeth kicked in initially, and then run toe-to-toe with them, and then ultimately 2 years ago to whoop them all on a regular basis. That's a great story because it just shows the progression of Josh Berry, and he didn't click his heels, and it didn't come overnight. Dale Jr. has the patience with that late model program for a racer like Josh Berry to do just exactly what he did. Dale Sr., this would be his kind of guy. If Dale, you know, we live in the hypotheticals of Dale,
yep,
DEI, Josh Berry would be the type of driver in the fold at DEI driving one of those cars.
There's no doubt about that. Steve,
yeah,
Post is with us from MRN. here at Daytona. Another guy, his teammate, Noah Gragson. Now, Noah Gragson is a guy I love.
Like,
he's got attitude. He's got a little Dale Sr. in him. He's got a little Tony Stewart in him. I mean, maybe some Jeff Gordon, just all kind of mixed together. And Dale Jr. has said, you know, that's kind of his project. He's got to work with him on some things. He's going to run a handful of cup races this year, obviously running for the Xfinity Series title. But he's the personality that I think this sport loves and needs.
No doubt about it. Noah is very his personality is right on his sleeve. You see him when he's celebrating. Nobody celebrates harder. And when he trips and falls, nobody falls harder than he does as well. And you know, we live in a society where, with social media impact, guys like that can be polarizing. And Noah has adapted well to some of the jabs, some of the jeers that come, and embraces himself as to who he is, knows he's a quality race car driver. I think Dale Jr. has been really good for him because it's a steady hand. There are some of these teams that swap out drivers like you and I swap out socks. Junior Motorsports, when you look at it, they're very, very steady. You rarely see someone go to Junior Motorsports and halfway through the season get booted out on their ear. Guys that have been there, like the Justin Allgaiers of the world, and Michael Annett, who finally stepped away at the end of last year, but years and years and years, it's a perfect spot for someone like Noah. He goes out and he's going to win some races for Junior, and he's going to go out and make Junior have to call some other team owner and apologize about wrecking the race car and all of the things in between. But along the way, he's given us a great ride to follow. And Noah is one of those guys. This is going to be a good year. You talked about the Xfinity Series. To me, he's going to be one of those guys to really watch, because how many more of those better days can he have than those bad days? I think he has a lot more better days than those bad days. In fact, we might get in the second half of the season, it's been like, when's the last time Noah kind of tripped over himself? We don't know that. I think that's how talented he is and where he can go with it.
Hey, stick around. We have much more coming with Steve Post of the Motor Racing Network. It's all presented by Social Furniture on Charlotte Avenue. Shop local, shop social, and also Backyard Blues Pools. More with Steve Post of the Motor Racing Network next on ESPN 102.5 The Game, The Game Nashville app. We're back here on Chasing Checkers on ESPN 102.5 The Game. We are live at the Daytona International Speedway. It is a beautiful day here at Daytona. Appreciate Social Furniture and Backyard Blues Pools for helping out with our coverage this week. Let's pick up our conversation with Steve Post of the Motor Racing Network. So looking at, like, Colic Racing is moving up to the Cup Series, and Justin Haley has kind of been along for the ride with them in the Xfinity Series and now getting a shot. Obviously, having A.J. Allmendinger in the fold was huge for them.
No,
because you got that experience. Junior Motorsports has Allgaier, and then you have Sam Mayer, who's the young driver. If you're Dale Jr. and you're thinking, okay, I'm finally going to do it. Everybody keeps asking me about it. I'm going to make the jump. The new car is going to make it easier. I look at Noah Gragson and Josh Berry and go, that's two guys I'd love to start a Cup team with.
And I think, and again, there's a lot that goes into it. The whole charter system, which it would take 62 attorneys to understand it and a couple bankers. You know, if they can find a way to get a charter, and again, 62 attorneys, you probably need 72 bankers to do that. But if they can find a way to get a charter, you're right. Everything else is in place, including a driver roster.
Sure.
And you know, you take those two young guys, I just think that they're so honed, they're so good. One's very, very even keel. One's a little bit wilder. I think that's a good combination, actually. And I just think that I think they're poised. Should Junior and Kelly and that crew be able to find themselves into a couple charters, I think that they have got a lot of things in place already, including a driver lineup that could take them to the promised land.
And I mentioned Colic Racing. What is kind of your expectation with them? They already got the Cup win under their belt with AJ, but they got a good lineup of Justin Haley running the full schedule, young driver, and then mixing it up with some drivers in that second car.
If you ask me, Chase, about any other first-year, one-and-a-half-year team, I would say watch them on the plate tracks. They might sneak into a top 15 here and there, maybe sneak into a top 10. This team defies every historical piece of logic in NASCAR. I have no idea what to expect. Again, an AJ going and winning road courses, there's not a shocker there.
Yeah.
Well, by the way, there's seven road courses this year.
Yeah.
You know, and if I'm not mistaken, I think AJ's slated to run all of them for that team.
Yep.
So what if they go out and win a couple of those road course races? Well, geez, they're going to be better than a lot of bigger teams, more established teams. And I'm telling you, Justin Haley, I just watching the way he carries himself. He's that even keel guy again, like we talked a little bit with Josh Berry. Look, he went to the Coliseum, and he was the star of the show at the Coliseum. Now, granted, the Coliseum is a unique animal, but he was the star of the show at the Coliseum. You know, well, Daniel Hemric's running the second car, the rotating driver car. Most of qualifying for the longest time, he was the star of the show here. This college team does not play by the normal hierarchy rules. And so I don't know what to expect. Road courses with seven of them, I think they have a shot to win all of those races. Plate races, Daniel Hemric's a great place racer. Justin Haley has a cup win. Yep. It's in a plate race here. Yep. I don't know. Could they win three or four or five races? Well, I don't know. Say they won't, because that's a team. That's a team when you say they won't do something, they'll say, watch this, hold my beer. Right. You know, and I love their attitude. So that's a team I have no idea, because they've thus far defied every piece of historical logic that this sport has.
Yeah, and I think that they're an example of where the sport's going, yep, where it needs to go with new ownership, new teams coming in. Obviously, Michael Jordan was the big, yep, story last year. Pitbull with Trackhouse.
No
Trackhouse
doubt.
Being based out of Nashville. So
yeah, absolutely.
Keeping up with that. That Tootsie's
car
looks awesome.
Oh, my favorite car. Oh, God, I love that car. 5 years ago, a guy named Michael Knight, I had thought about this a lot. A guy named Michael Knight writes with the Phoenix, the Arizona Sun in Phoenix, and he did a really, really in-depth piece of who's going to own NASCAR teams. At the time, Roger Penske, 80 years old, Jack Roush, 70-some years old, Joe Gibbs, Richard Childress, Richard Petty, you know, and I mean, I'm missing some. The average age of the owner of the top 30 cars was upper 70s.
Right.
It's like, what's going to happen here? What is this going to look like? Well, now you look at it, it's like, whoa, we in the last 5 years have had this total shift. The other problem with because not only Rick Hendrick, yeah, that was the other one I was thinking of, but not only who's the succession plan. You know, Gibbs had a really good plan in place, and then JD had his health issues, yeah, and we lost JD. But when you look at each operation, it's like, well, who's going to run this? You know, who's the son? Who's the son-in-law? Who's the family? I don't know. And now you look at it with the colleagues of the racing. Bob Jenkins with Front Row Motorsports. I know he's been around, yeah, for a while. Bob Jenkins is a guy in his mid to late 50s. I think his approach has been, I'm 5 years ago, I'm younger than all these guys. I'll outlive him by 20 years and see where I'm at. Now he's in the middle of it from the age perspective. So I just think it's really exciting to see this new energy, this new ownership in here, and the new ways of doing things. Justin Marks, nobody
I
does things.
I love Justin Marks. He's awesome, man.
More creative than him. I mean, last year, okay, this is Nashville. Last year, the Thursday of the race at the Super Speedway, Alex Hayden and myself and a couple other people were walking in front of the stadium. We're coming to the top of Lower Broadway. Lower Broadway is shut down. There's, yep, people everywhere. I mean, it's shut down just with a sea of people at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. What in the world is going on? I love Nashville and I love Lower Broadway, but at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, you usually expect to be able to walk. And we look and there's a car in the middle of it. It's the Tootsie's car. It's when they unveiled it and they, yeah, were doing a media thing. You might have been there for it.
Yeah.
I'm like, who had Daniel Suarez shutting down Lower Broadway at 3 o'clock on a Thursday in Nashville in their bingo card? Well, that's Justin Marks, and that's Daniel Suarez. Daniel's a great racer. Yep. Ross Chastain coming over there, but that's Justin Marks and the creative way of doing things. The Tootsie's car. That last year, I do a diecast review show, and historically, every year, what's your favorite diecast car? The Petty STP car last year was one of the first years it was an exception. The Tootsie's car was my favorite car. I love Tootsie's. I love going in there and having a beer. I love the story of Tootsie's.
Yeah.
But they shut down Lower Broadway. That's what Justin Mark's going to do with Pitbull. And I can't wait to see what happens once they get fully established and entrenched over there in Music City, because I just think that's the future of NASCAR ownership, a guy like that.
Real quick, before I let you go, just on this ownership conversation and who takes over. You have Jeff Gordon that's, yep, in a position now to basically run Hendrick.
Now we have a succession piece there, correct,
yep,
yes.
Because we obviously know Ricky passing,
right,
away.
Absolutely,
yeah, plane crash. But then Denny Hamlin gets into ownership, and he's looking at things from different sides. Tony Stewart,
yep,
got into ownership. That, I feel like, is just as important as getting new owners, as having the drivers that when they get out of the car – they're still involved in the sport, and owning a team is the best way to do it.
When you look at those old guys that we talked about, Roger Penske, a racer, Jack Roush, a racer, yep, Richard Childress, a racer, Rick Hendrick, a racer, Chip Ganassi, who sold his team, a racer, 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 racer. Very few businessmen.
Yep.
I mean, they're racers and successful businessmen, okay? Well, look, Denny Hamlin, he's a racer. Tony Stewart, he's a racer. When you look at all of these people, Justin Marks,
racer.
Boy, there's nobody a better racer than that. You've got to have it. It's like we're dealing with this totally different subject, NFL football. Okay, NFL football. You guys have got a really good team in Tennessee. We've got a terrible team in Carolina. Okay? We've got the most successful, richest owner in David Tepper. And the business practices of trading stocks and buying and selling things does not work in the NFL. The same thing with business. How many business owners have come into NASCAR, but the racers with a little bit of business acumen, a little bit of business savvy do better? And that's what we have with Denny and Tony and folks like this. Justin, it's just so exciting. It's just really, really neat.
It's a great time for the sport.
Yes, it is.
That is for sure. He's Steve Post. He'll be roaming pit road for the Motor Racing Network all weekend long, including the Daytona 500 on Sunday. You know, this was so much fun. Let's do it again tomorrow.
Let's do it again tomorrow. I can't wait to meet you here on Radio Row. This is fun. Beautiful time here in Daytona.
Coming up next on this special edition of Chasing Checkers, we're going to talk to Clay Greenfield. He is a driver in the Camping World Truck Series and a Clarksville, Tennessee native. We'll do that when we come back on Chasing Checkers. ESPN 102.5 The Game Nashville app. We're back here on Chasing Checkers, ESPN 102.5 The Game. We're streaming on the Game Nashville app. Chase McKay live at the Daytona International Speedway. And, of course, it's all brought to you by Social Furniture on Charlotte Avenue. Shop local, shop social, and Backyard Blues Pools being part of our coverage. And what better way to segue into my next guest? Clay Greenfield is here with us, and he, of course, is a part of Backyard Blues Racing and has them on that truck in the Camping World Truck Series. Clay, how are you?
I'm good. How are you doing? It's a beautiful day here. Good day to go racing.
Yeah, it is, and the Truck Series coming up tonight, Friday night, around this place. I know you got qualifying coming up. How you feeling about it?
I feel good. We only ran by ourselves yesterday, so obviously, I wasn't expecting to be up on the speed chart because most people drafted. But compared to some of the other good trucks on there, single time, I think we're good. Truck felt accelerated well. Felt like it rolled well. It coasted well after being shut down. So I feel from inside the truck, it feels good. So I think we go see what we have here in a few minutes, and hopefully it's good enough. I'm sure it will be.
I feel – so I've never seen the trucks race here. I've seen the trucks at Talladega. I've seen them at Nashville. I've seen them a bunch of different places. So I'm really excited about seeing you guys because I was talking to Adam Alexander from Fox earlier. I feel like sometimes there's a little bit of that checkers or wreckers mentality when you come to Daytona.
Yeah, for sure, and particularly in the truck series, like you've got a mix of guys with a lot of experience, and then you've got a group that probably doesn't have very much at all. So there's mistakes to be made. I remember getting wrecked on first lap by Chase Briscoe, was aggressive through the travel, bumping several years ago, took us out on the first lap, and then obviously he's gone on to be great from there. But as an example, that your first time I wrecked Brad Keselowski my first time here. It happens because it's just a totally different type of racing than anything you've ever done, and you just got to keep your eyes open for that and be ready for it.
What's it like being in the draft in one of these trucks? Because, is there a big difference than from the driver's seat of what it might feel like in a race car or what it feels like in a truck?
There is no way to describe what the draft is. Like, it's a completely undescribable thing. The closest thing I can compare it to is, like, anyone that's been behind a semi-truck on the interstate, you can kind of feel the air buffering around. But you magnify that times 50 or 100. And it's almost like you feel the energy. It's almost like picture you're like in a toy car and a kid picks up the car and is like shaking it. It's like you almost like feel the energy inside the car when you're in the draft. It's an amazing thing. And when if somebody pulls out and gets on your right side, dumps air on your spoiler, it's like there's an invisible person inside the truck mashing the brake. There's just so much stuff that the air does that is just – It's really insane, to be honest. And, like, on a mile and a half track, you can actually spin somebody out without ever touching them just by driving in on their door. It's like sitting in a four-legged chair and somebody breaks one leg off the chair. Like, it's that intense. That's why people are most of the time on a mile and a half track, you'll see the leader pick the outside. That's the reason, so they don't get pinned down there on the inside. But it's unbelievable what the air does. And, the cars by nature are more aerodynamically sound. So it you still have that effect in a car, but it's just exaggerated on a truck because the sides of our trucks there's so much area on the side of the truck that they that we rely on to keep us keep us intact. Like, a lot of places you're running more on aero downforce than mechanical grip. And you can, like, for instance, I've been at Texas one time going into turn three and caution came out. Well, running through there wide open, it feels good, but I was running three-quarter speed and about wrecked just because I lost my downforce because I wasn't carrying that speed, and it was beyond what the mechanical grip really wanted to hold. So it's just it is really unbelievable what the air does.
Talking to Clay Greenfield, going to be in the Truck Series race, and of course Clarksville's own, and a Tennessean. What's kind of your background in racing? Obviously, you're known around the Nashville area.
Yeah, so I started racing at Clarksville Speedway, not at the dirt track, but there was a little eighth-mile paved track we ran.
Okay.
It was called Junior Late Models, which was effectively like a go-kart with a dirt late model-style body on it. Started racing there, then moved to Legends Cars. I raced at Twin Fountains Raceway in Shelbyville, Nashville Fairgrounds on the quarter-mile track. We traveled all over. We raced, Atlanta, Huntsville. We would come down here and race at Citrus County Speedway. And then moved to Highland Rim in the late models, won a late model championship there, and went to the National Fairgrounds, spent several years racing there. And then we kind of moved on to the Tour and Late Model Series in the Carolinas, and ran a couple of ARCA races. And then in 2010, I'd had an opportunity to go truck racing, and that's what we've done mostly since then. I mean, I've got a pro late model that I hopefully will be running at Nashville if we get time this year. A couple years ago, we ran a few races there. So it's, the fairgrounds is a place that's really special to me.
Yeah.
And especially with everything we've gone through, coming so close to losing the track a number of years ago, I was one of the people at the city council meeting. I think it was about 2,000 people showed up wearing red supporting the racetrack. And just to know how close we came to losing it, to see that now we're on the verge of potentially getting NASCAR back there is something I'm super excited about.
Yeah, and I mean, the thing that's so cool is that nobody really saw coming is here comes the Super Speedway back. I'm sure you raced there the first time around, and then it comes back, makes its return, a huge return with the Cup Series coming there. And now there's the potential of having both in operation, both with NASCAR there, which I think is huge for the Nashville area.
No, that would be awesome. My heart is more at the fairgrounds than the Super Speedway, but I think it's a good mix because it's two totally different types of racing.
Right.
So, depending on what, there's something for everybody. There's a certain group that might like the mile and a half style racing better, and then there's a lot that, like the short track racing. So if, say if there was a race at both, I think it serves everyone's interest, and then you throw in the race downtown on the streets. There's something for everybody, motorsports-wise.
Yeah, no doubt about it. So the first time that you got on the big track at the fairgrounds, what kind of went through your head when you're making your first few laps around there?
I thought it was the fastest. Like, I thought that was the biggest place you could ever go because I had been on quarter miles my whole life, and it seemed like I was going twice the speed of, what we did on quarter miles, and it was like, oh, my gosh, how do you go on a bigger track than this? And I think that's something that has helped my career moving forward is just having all that experience at the fairgrounds, because I really can't think of a late model track. I mean, there's every year there's the big race in Martinsville. I feel like that's, and UARA, we ran at Rockingham a couple times, but other than that, I don't know that there's a local racetrack that's as big and as fast as the Nashville Fairgrounds. And I think that helped prepare me when I stepped into NASCAR.
I was there for the SRX race and standing in the infield and trying to just imagine what it would look like if SMI comes in and does everything that they want to do. Now, I'm not a race car driver. I know a lot of you are like, don't touch the surface. Like, it
absolutely not.
It's got character. Like,
yes.
Keep it. Don't touch it. I'm afraid they're going to, but it just watching you all navigate it. But do you allow yourself to kind of look at it and go, what is this place going to look like with some money dumped into it?
A little bit. I kind of wish they would just not touch a thing and maybe update the bathrooms a little bit.
Yeah.
And bring everybody in. And like you said, to the point of the racetrack, the track has so much character. And even going from when I used to run there back in the early 2000s to coming back a couple years ago and running we used to not think about tire management, and it is 100% a tire management track now. And, you got that dip off of turn two that really scares a lot of people, but it's really not that big a deal if you know how to drive across it. So I feel like that it would be a huge advantage for me if they didn't touch it when we came back. And, you know, as racers, we only worry about ourselves, so let's not touch it.
Yeah, my uncle used to tell me Harry Gant was the best at running that dip, that he knew how to hit it just right and get a good run off of it and won some races out there. But
yeah, as long as you're pointed straight, it's really not that big a deal. If you've got wheel in it at that point, then you can get in trouble. But
yeah, so as we wrap this up, because I know you got to get ready for qualifying, what do you think about your chances tonight here at Daytona? Anything can happen at this racetrack.
Well, the big thing to me, the most pressure is qualifying. As long as, so there's 42 trucks here. We have to qualify, I believe it's top 31 to make it on the race, the way that the NASCAR rules are with their provisionals and everything like that. So as long as we make the race, we've got as good a chance as anybody to win. And I feel like the last two times I was here, I felt like we should have won and kept figuring out a way to crash inside 10 to go. So we just got to go with that same plan and just minus the crash at the end.
Awesome. Well, best of luck. Thanks for doing this. And Backyard Blues.
Absolutely. Thank
having
you.
Them on the truck, and it's good to have them on the show. Talk about them real quick.
So Jordan Kiss, great guy. He's excited about racing. But I was driving. He walked in yesterday as I was driving out on the racetrack to practice and waved at him. And he's just, man, the truck's beautiful. Really big thanks to Backyard Blues Pools. If you need a swimming pool, give them a call. And just can't thank them enough. And I think it's going to be a big, big, big weekend for them.
Very, very cool. Clay, good to see you. Thanks for doing this. We'll do it again soon.
Yeah, that sounds good. Thank you.
Appreciate Clay Greenfield for joining us. Listen, you're used to 1 hour Chasing Checkers. You get two today here at the Daytona International Speedway. And don't forget to join us at 8 o'clock tomorrow morning for another edition of Chasing Checkers live at Daytona. It's all been presented by Social Furniture on Charlotte Avenue. Shop local, shop social, and also by Backyard Blues Pools. When we come back, Adam Alexander, Fox Sports, going to join us. Chatted with him yesterday on Darren Donovan. Chase, we'll do that when we return here on Chasing Checkers Special Edition, ESPN 1025 The Game, The Game Nashville app.
Here they come, turn four, final lap.
Rev up your engines and get ready for the racing weekend.
Checker flag.
It's Chasing Checkers with your host, Chase McCabe, on Nashville's best sports talk,
ESPN
102.5 The Game, and the Game Nashville app.
Hour number two of a special edition of Chasing Checkers here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. It's also streaming on the Game Nashville app. AJ Allmendinger coming up in just a few minutes. But as we kick things off, and it's all brought to you by Social Furniture on Charlotte Avenue, shop local, shop social, and also Backyard Blues Pools here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Chase McCabe hanging out with you at Daytona. Yesterday on Darren Donovan Chase, I had a chance to sit down with Adam Alexander. He's going to be on the call for the Xfinity Series race from Fox Sports. We got into all things going on with the next-gen car, but also the Xfinity Series race. Having a blast. The weather is great. 85 degrees today is supposed to be the high. Can't complain about that at all. It's all presented by Social Furniture on Charlotte Avenue and Backyard Blues Pools as well. Chase McCabe with Adam Alexander of Fox Sports. He's going to be on the call for the Xfinity Series race tomorrow. And, of course, we will have the Cup Series from MRN on Sunday starting at 12:30. Adam, good to see you. How are you?
Good. Great to be here. And I'm like you. I mean, this is outstanding what we've got weather-wise. The place is completely sold out, the 500. In the stands on Sunday, and the infield and all of that completely a sellout. There is a true buzz here, and I'm not going to say we haven't experienced this in recent years, but as we all know, the pandemic did change the feel. This is great. The energy is awesome, and I'm looking forward to a wonderful weekend.
Yeah, and I mean, it started last night with the duels, which they were kind of tame but from what we've seen in the past, and you expected that because of the new car and the shortage of supplies and all of that. I know not every team brought a backup car, so they had to be careful there. But I believe it's going to pick up starting tonight with the Truck Series, the Xfinity race that you're going to be a part of tomorrow, and then, of course, the Cup Series on Sunday.
There's no doubt it always builds to Sunday. And I've talked to so many drivers that described exactly what you laid out about last night. Because of where they are with this new car, you had to be careful in those qualifying races last night. And for many, you're locked into the field, and so the plus-minus of going out and getting crazy in the draft doesn't make a ton of sense on Thursday night. I think all of them, though, feel like Sunday's the Daytona 500, And at that point, the gloves will come off. They'll go out and get after it. And I think we'll really be entertained. We always are on Friday night. And as you said during the break, I mean, it is really checkers or wreckers for the Camping World Truck Series here. And at 250 miles, you don't have a ton of time to get your work done in 100 laps. And so the sense of urgency is always up. I think we'll see more of the same tomorrow in that Xfinity race that is 300 miles. And, of course, the culmination on Sunday with the Daytona 500.
And tomorrow on the broadcast on Fox, you're going to be joined by Chad Knaus, who's a championship-winning crew chief, won all those championships with Jimmy Johnson, and a guy that's pretty good around this place, three-time Daytona 500 champion Denny Hamlin. That's going to be fun.
He is so good, and when it comes to Daytona, and I'm anxious to see him and hear from him in the TV booth, because we had him a number of years ago as one of our guest analysts. We've been in this rotation now. Hard to believe this is the eighth year we've been bringing Cup drivers to the booth on Saturdays. And we had him at Talladega, and he was great, right? But I feel like Denny has grown so much in recent years. Not only his success on track, but the ownership role, the maturity, and the better perspective on the sport. And that, I think, will really translate to the broadcast tomorrow. You've got two guys that are really analytical, and Denny and Chad, obviously come from different places. One's a driver, one's a crew chief, one's been in the Toyota family for a long time. You know, Chad's been a Chevy guy at Hendrick Motorsports forever. Those two together, I think, will be a very, very interesting dynamic in the broadcast booth.
Denny sat down at the table at the championship banquet in Nashville, and I was telling you during the break that was the first time that I'd talked to him before in, like, press conference settings and things like that, but this was the first, like, one-on-one. And I walked away from that going, he's a smart guy. You know why he's in the ownership part of this. He has the future of the sport in mind in how he thinks about things, but he also is one that is open to – you know, ideas of if he talks to NASCAR and they give him their point of view, that he may go, okay, I get it now. I see it from two different sides, from the driver's seat and the owner's side. I think the sport needs more of that, more guys like Denny Hamlin to help move it forward.
But, you know, forever, the guy that was the go-between the drivers in the garage to NASCAR was Dale Earnhardt. He kind of led the charge, right? And that's when NASCAR, you know, subscribed to this theory of, we can live without every one of you, so this is the way we're going to do it. The world has changed. This sport has changed dramatically. Communication is key to any successful organization. And we have gone through this crossover in NASCAR where all parties understand if we're going to be successful and we're going to maximize our resources, we have to come together to do it. And we've seen that at many levels. And I think a guy like Denny Hamlin, who has seen it from every side, and you know, the other thing that Denny brings is his, you know, business partner in this whole ownership venture is Michael Jordan, who's not just a great businessman, but he's a stick and ball guy. And when you can bring that perspective, which is just another layer of knowledge, I think you become a great liaison to go speak to NASCAR and represent the driver ownership group. And Denny has, you know, really had that on full display in the last year.
I love how where this sport is going. We're talking to Adam Alexander from Fox Sports, getting new owners in here, having a succession plan with Jeff Gordon, you know, moving into his role with Hendrick, Denny moving into an ownership role. You had Tony Stewart, who kind of started that a few years ago. It feels like that's what some of these drivers are doing to stay involved once their driving career is done. But having the new owners in the sport, whether it's Michael Jordan or Floyd Mayweather or Colleague Racing, they need that to help move it forward.
Well, the biggest concern I had for the sport, you know, 4 or 5 years ago was the age of some of the owners. And, you know, it just happens, right? I mean, Father Time is undefeated. And some of the guys that are iconic names have been around the garage forever, and NASCAR would not be where it is without them. They're getting older, and it becomes a question of what's the succession plan. And for some of these organizations, the owners had a plan in place. Maybe there was a family member that was going to take over, and in some situations we've seen that. But you also needed some outside folks to come in and take on an ownership role. And now, as you said, we're seeing that. And we're not just seeing it from guys that are businessmen like Matt Colick, who I think we desperately need. It has been an incredible shot in the arm for both the Xfinity Series and now the Cup Series from an ownership perspective. But when you get Hall of Fame-type drivers like Tony Stewart and Denny Hamlin, Brad Keselowski, that are willing to be owners. And, you know, you look at Justin Marks. Justin won one Xfinity race. I mean, he's not going to be in the NASCAR Hall of Fame as a driver, but he understands that side of it. But he's also a tremendous businessman. He partners up with Pitbull, and now Trackhouse is doing unbelievable things after he bought out Chip Ganassi.
So Nashville's own.
That's right. That's right. So across the board, I just think the sport has gone in such a wonderful direction, and all of that new leadership brings more ideas, which add opportunities for growth.
A driver you're going to see tomorrow in the Xfinity Series, obviously we keep an eye on, being from Hendersonville, Josh Berry. An awesome story for him to run the short track program for Junior Motorsports and Dale Jr. And Dale Jr.'s an old school guy, so you know that he loves guys that come up through the ranks like his dad made him do, and Dale Sr. would have loved him too. But now he's got a shot to run for a championship. He won two races last year in a part-time schedule. I look for that 8 car to be pretty stout starting tomorrow.
No doubt about that. And, you know, as I look back at 2021, and I think one of the biggest storylines to me, you know, right there in the top two or three has got to be what Josh Berry did. Because when he got that opportunity, and it was the first time he really had any shot to run that many races in a season at that level, you felt like, okay, maybe this guy can get some traction and show what he's capable of. Because we had seen flashes of talent over the years. And not only did he go out and show what he's capable of, as you said, he won two races, and he won what I thought was one of the most pressure-packed events at Martinsville. Now some would say, why is there pressure? Because that's where he's been, and he's been so good there. But I felt like when you know all your eggs are in that basket and you got to go out and deliver, that's a lot.
Sure.
And he did that. I was so impressed. And then to fill in for Michael Annette and drive the one car and win again later in the year, it really showed off what he's capable of. And he's a great story, one of the nicest guys you'll ever meet, so humble, true to his roots, and he's going to be someone that I think we'll be talking about deep into the season.
Real quick, Kyle Larson's going to sit on the pole for the Daytona 500. He won 10 races last year, won the All-Star race last year, and won the championship at Phoenix. I would say it's a pretty good start to a title defense, because even with the new car, even with unknowns, he's such a talented driver, and Hendrick Motorsports is clicking on all cylinders right now. It looks like he's going to be tough to beat yet again.
You just expect him to go out and win, really.
Yeah.
I mean, everything you mentioned, and now here we are, and it's like, why would you bet against him, especially since he's starting on the pole? And I know the pole winner here doesn't always have great success in the race, but Larson is one of those guys that you feel like it's his time. And if he wins here on Sunday, look out for what he could accomplish throughout 2022.
Is there a dark horse you like on Sunday?
Well, you know, I said the other night on a show, I like Brad Keselowski as a sleeper, and then he won the duel, and so that really kind of takes away him being a sleeper. But I do like both those cars from the Roush Fenway organization, who maybe weren't at the top of the list of favorites. Maybe a William Byron is someone to keep an eye on. I know he's a Hendrick guy, but, you know, he hadn't won on this big stage, being the 500, won here in the summertime a couple of years ago. Maybe those guys. I don't know. It's so hard. Chase Briscoe, Cole Custer, maybe, you know.
Well, it's going to be fun, that's for sure. The Xfinity race tomorrow and the 500 on Sunday. Adam, always a pleasure to talk to you. Good to see you again. And we'll do it again soon when you guys get to Nashville.
Look forward to it. Thanks for having me, and hello to everybody in Music City.
That's Adam Alexander from Fox Sports joining us. You heard that on Darren Donick and Chase yesterday. Appreciate him for doing that. When we come back, we'll talk more Xfinity Series. AJ Allmendinger, driver for Colic Racing, he is going to join us. We'll do that next here on Chasing Checkers, live at the Daytona International Speedway, presented by Social Furniture on Charlotte Avenue. Shop local, shop social, and Backyard Blues Pools here on ESPN 102.5 The Game and The Game Nashville app. And welcome back to a very special edition of Chasing Checkers here on ESPN 102.5 The Game at the Daytona International Speedway. And, of course, it's all brought to you by Social Furniture. Shop local, shop social. Chase McCabe here with you, and excited to talk to our next guest, because he's never short on words, and he's always entertaining. AJ Allmendinger is on with us. AJ, how you doing?
I'm doing great. Feeling good about the race and Man, the year finally kicking off.
I know. Well, I feel like – so I was in Phoenix, and I watched that awesome Xfinity Series race, the conclusion to the season, and now all of a sudden here we are in Daytona. So it didn't feel like a very long off season. But before we get to Daytona, you were in the Clash, the inaugural Busch Light Clash at the L.A. Coliseum. What was that like from the driver's seat?
Yeah, I thought actually it turned out really well. I didn't have an opinion either way. You never want to go into those races with the yay or nay opinion. But it's cool to try something new, especially at a race like the Clash where it's not points. It's about going out there and winning trophies and money. And I felt like the Clash needed something different because it had gotten stagnant and wasn't pulling on a lot of TV ratings or fans for that matter. But to go to the L.A. Coliseum, a historical place. I used to love watching Supercross races back in the day on TV at that place, watching them go out of the stadium and back in. So to be inside the stadium racing like that, I thought the track and this next-gen car was actually suited pretty well. We could go out there and make passes. We still had to beat and bang on each other. But to me, the coolest part of it was at halftime, we're inside the car, and you got Ice Cube playing the stadium. The place was rocking. Like, you could see everybody, just the energy level that they had, the fans. It pumps up the drivers. So I thought for the first attempt, it went about as good as it could.
Now, I know how loud a race car can be, and especially these cars. I feel like they're even louder, just sound like they have more muscle to them. But with the stadium setting, could you hear the fans from the race car?
Not while I was running, because you are right. These things are pretty loud. And when you get in a tight space like that, it's kind of like Bristol where the sound just bounces off the stadium and it kind of comes back into the race car. But when we shut the cars off, and you could just hear the energy level of the crowd, whether it was like when we were out of the car for the B-Main, still inside the Coliseum, the crowd was getting after it. And then for the main event, yeah, at halftime with the music playing, the crowd was getting after it. It was a lot of fun. I was really happy that I could be a part of it for the first time.
Yeah, and NASCAR coming up with these new ideas, and especially when they hit on one. And, you know, one thing that I noted is all you drivers loved it. And, I mean, we know drivers have opinions and sometimes don't always agree with the decision that gets made, but it feels like it was just a home run across the board, which opens the door for, okay, do you go back to the Coliseum? Do you try and do this somewhere else? You mentioned the new car and just the capabilities that it has. It feels like the sky's the limit on some of these special events that they can do.
Yeah, for sure. I think it's something that, yeah, do you do it for a points race? Probably not. It would be hard to do it for a points race because at a place like that, you can't fit 40 cars out there, really. But yeah, for a Clash, or I would say even the All-Star race, because the All-Star race lately, to me at least, gotten a little bland and a little plain. You know, it opens up opportunities to go out there and try new things. And it's a fine line, right? The traditional NASCAR fans sometimes, and I bet they'd say they didn't like the race. But you got to have that mix of keeping the great fans that we have, but we got to bring in a new crowd as well. We got to keep building up what NASCAR is. And when you bring it to the people, so back in the day, I used to race Champ Car, and our big draw were street course races. You'd race in the city streets, and you'd have people that had never been to a racetrack that lived right by where we were racing come walking out and seeing what it was all about, and you'd get big crowds. So doing things like that is what is needed sometimes to bring in a new fan.
Well, if you like street courses, we got a pretty cool one here in Nashville if you want to do the IndyCar thing again.
Well, I saw that. Like, if we got to jump some cars over a bridge, we'll do that.
Oh, it was fun, man. It was seeing those trucks do all those jumps was pretty cool. AJ Allmendinger is with us, driver for Colic Racing. And I mentioned that race team. You had the pleasure to get them their first Cup Series win last year. And I know at this point in your career, running the Xfinity Series full-time, running a handful of Cup races, but how special was that to be the one that got them to victory lane for the first time?
Yeah, I mean, in the place that we did it at Indianapolis, a racetrack that for me has always meant the world to me. And, you know, there's a time that over the last few years, I'm like, okay, maybe we don't kiss the bridge. And the funny part of it was the Xfinity race on Saturday was the one I thought we really had a great shot at. And we just didn't play the right strategy out. So I was, super, super bummed. I was so down Saturday night because I thought, man, that was our chance. Because our cup car on Sunday and even in practice on Saturday, it was okay. But I didn't think it had the race-winning speed and the way that race played out to get the victory, be at Indianapolis, to be able to kiss the bricks, to get College Racing their first cup victory. And, you know, something special was I saw a list the next week about drivers getting teams their first win, and I was on that list twice because at JTG Doherty,
that's right,
we were able to do that as well. So, yeah, when you get a team their first victory, especially at the elite level, at least, I mean, for me, it means the world to me. So it was awesome to be able to do that. And no matter what happens the rest of life, College Racing's got a cup victory. Hopefully we get a lot of them, but they at least have one.
Yeah, and running two full car teams this year, you're going to run a handful of races, splitting some time with other drivers. But running for the Xfinity Series Championship, you walk into Daytona. Do you still get goosebumps when you walk into that place?
Yeah, it's to me, there's a few racetracks in motorsports that you drive into and you know the history and what that place means to not just NASCAR or IndyCar or sports cars, et cetera, but you know what that racetrack means to motorsports, and Daytona's one of them. So driving through those tunnels, especially to start the year, every time you get those nerves, you feel like, for me, chest gets a little tighter. You get that anticipation driving into the tunnel, and it's you know it's about to begin.
Yeah, and how do you like your chances this year? I mean, it's always kind of a coin flip at Daytona because those races come down to the wire and get a little wild at the end, but you're pretty good on these super speedways.
Yeah, I mean, I've always looked at the Daytona, whether it's trucks, Xfinity, or the Daytona 500, it's its own race. Of course, there's still points that pay for it and all that, but it's its own race, and then you get to Fontana the next week, and then the season really begins. But College Racing with ECR Power, we always have fast race cars. We've always have a chance to go win that race. Anything can happen, but you know, at the end of the day, you're just trying to put yourself in a position to go win the race. And I think it'll be the same way this year to have the Xfinity champion, Daniel Hemric, be a part of the team now, yeah, with Justin Haley moving up to full-time cup and then bringing in Landon Castle, which has been a great race car driver his whole life that hasn't had great equipment. So I'm really looking forward to see what he can do in our race cars. We should have a great shot at it. So hopefully we just put ourselves in that position on Saturday. And we at least put the college cars there with a chance to win. That's what it comes down to.
That's all you can ask for sure. Last week I had Austin Cindric on the show, and I brought up to him the same thing I'm going to bring up to you. Laughing at you two in the post-race press conference at Phoenix, just picking on each other. I can tell you have a very good relationship, and he said some very nice things about you, that you've been a big mentor to him. What is it that makes you two so close?
Yeah, I've known Austin back in my time with Team Penske back in 2012, and he has great opportunities, right? Like, well, let's not hide that. You know, Tim Cindric's his dad, and that's the president of Team Penske. But Austin also really works hard at it. And when he first came into NASCAR, he struggled a bit, but he's put a lot of effort into it. And, you know, I told him straight up, you know, when he first got in the Xfinity Series with Team Penske, the car was way above him. Like, the car was fast, and he was just trying to figure out how to drive it. Well, I actually felt like he took that car to the next level, and he is the champion. He was close to being the two-time champion. And I love racing against him. We had our incidents. We had our ups and downs. But what I always enjoy about Austin is you can sit down and talk to him, or you can kind of hash it out. You give each other the sides of your opinions, and you move on. And that's what we've done. But I think he's going to be great in the Cup Series. And I just – he really raised my game, trying to be better. And hopefully this year, just because of the last couple of years of having a race against him, it's made our team better. It's definitely made me better, and I enjoy and look forward to some more battles with them when I'm in the Cup Series for the 16 races this year.
Yeah, no doubt about it. AJ, it's a fantastic to talk to you. Enjoy Daytona. Good luck, and we'll do it again soon.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
AJ is one of the best, a personality for sure. Always appreciate him joining us. And when we come back, a interview you will not miss. I sat down with Ryan McGee from ESPN. He's fantastic. We have him on quite a bit to talk college football, but he loves racing. So we get into a lot with Ryan when we return here on Chasing Checkers, presented by Social Furniture, Shop Local, Shop Social, and Backyard Blues Pools on ESPN 102.5 The Game, Game Nashville app. We're back here, Chasing Checkers, ESPN 102.5 The Game. We are, of course, live at the Daytona International Speedway, as we have been the last couple of days, and appreciate Social Furniture on Charlotte Avenue and Backyard Blues Pools for their coverage, for helping with our coverage here from the Daytona International Speedway. Chase McCabe and Ryan McGee, one of our favorites from ESPN.
Up, man?
It's good to see you.
It's good to see you, like, in person.
I know.
I love being on the station. I'm on there, I'm on there all the time.
Yeah.
And the but we never see each other. So,
I know.
It's good. Certainly not when it's not usually in Hoover.
Yeah. SEC media days, and we're talking football, but we're talking racing, which is something that you and I both absolutely love. Now, you're around it in Charlotte. It's coming to me in Nashville.
Yeah.
How about this? The last time that we saw each other in person, we've gone from the NASCAR Cup Series coming back to Nashville at the Nashville Super Speedway.
Yeah.
It was awesome.
Yeah.
People were out there supporting it. Now we may have two cup races, one at the fairgrounds.
Yeah, it's amazing. And listen, I've said this to you before, and you're talking to a son of Rockingham, North Carolina. I was there last week. I try to avoid driving past the racetrack, but I drove right past it. And I tell everyone, we learned this in Rockingham, a ticket is a vote.
Yep.
So just because you got two races and they're at two different racetracks and all that's great, if you don't show up and you don't buy tickets, and I'm not talking about buying them in the first year. I'm talking about buying them, you know, season tickets, keep going back.
Year one's easy.
Oh, yeah. Rockingham got the truck series back, first year was great. Second year, nobody showed up.
Right.
Third year, they have a race. So you can't give them an excuse and to not come back. And so, no, it's been – what's cool is – all right, I was just in NASCAR President Steve Phelps' office across the street over here. I'm writing a story for ESPN.com for this weekend. And he has this unbelievable collection of, you know, artifacts behind him that people get. And right there front and center was the same Nashville Super Speedway red plastic solo cup that I use – Captain Morgan and I use every single night at my house. but it just tells me – that he's excited about it, and everyone's excited about it. So, yeah, it's going to be great. I mean, any excuse to get back. And, listen, what they have done with Champions Week is kind of what let them know. You know, it's always, to me, just been a crime that NASCAR wasn't racing in Nashville. If you know your history, then you know they should be there. And so now they're coming back. So, yeah, and been back. And if everybody does what they just did and keeps doing it, you know, they'll never leave.
Yeah, and I think it shows you, too. You talk about Steve Phelps.
Yeah.
I am very impressed with him.
He's so great.
Really have liked what he's done since he's been in that post. He recognizes the future, and they got to go to new places and try new things, like the LA Coliseum, giving that a shot. But he also recognizes the roots.
Yep.
And Nashville, whether it's the Super Speedway or their fairgrounds, all this talk of North Wilkesboro, it does give me hope for a place like Rockingham that, you know, when you thought it was dead, buried, and gone.
Yep.
Sorry, Nick Saban, that it could come back. I mean, do you look at it that way?
No, 100%. And that's what I tell people about Phelps is that people will talk about, you know, he's at the NFL for over a decade and a half and all that stuff. But he's been in NASCAR since 2004. I used to work for NASCAR. I worked in NASCAR Media Group, NASCAR Productions now. I was in meetings with him. And I'm crazy about him. What people may not know about him is he's a short track guy. Yes, he's a Yankee, right? He's from the Northeast. But he grew up going to the short tracks of New England and upstate New York. And those are his roots as a race fan. And so he wants to get back to those roots. That's why, you know, he greenlit dirt at Bristol. You know, that's why he greenlit that crazy thing that they just did, you know, in the Coliseum in Los Angeles. That was a quarter-mile track.
Right.
You know, and so I'm with you.
His roots.
His roots. And he learned, again, I always go back to – the couple of years I worked at NASCAR, I was in all the meetings with no decision-making power, by the way. I was in all the meetings when I would sit there and they would say, all right, no country music at any events, and we're going to leave Darlington on Labor Day weekend and all this stuff. And I wanted to stand up and go, hell, what are we doing? But I had no say. And Steve didn't have any say at the time. Now he does. And so he learned from the mistakes of back in the day when they got so far away from their roots because they just thought that – they called it the core audience. They thought hardcores would just stick around no matter what.
Sure.
They won't. I tell the college football people this all the time. You know, you can't get too far away from what got you to where you are.
Right.
And I wrote about that when Texas and Oklahoma, you know, crushed us all at Hoover about we're going, you know, when the story broke from Houston about their moving. And I've told her about, there's a precautionary tale in motorsports is you can't, you got to try new stuff, you know, evolve or die. But
right.
You have to do it in a way that pays tribute to where you came from. And that's what Steve Phelps is really, really good at.
Yeah, and I just feel like he gets it, and a lot of people, Steve O'Donnell, get it, that, you know, yep. There's too many racetracks sitting empty,
yep.
You know, or being torn down for yep. condominiums or, yep. or things like that, that, you know, you got to take care of those. And I'm all about expansion and building new ones,
right.
But you got to be smart about it. And I think in the, you know, late 90s, early 2000s, it was like bigger is better. And
yep.
That's not always the case.
It wasn't. And I lived those days, man. That was when I was right out of college, right out of Tennessee. And I was a young field producer. We had a show on ESPN2 called RPM Tonight.
Yep.
I worked on RPM. And so they would send me, and that's back when you're talking about the late 90s now. This is when, you know, the Nashville Super Speedway is when Vegas mm-hmm. is Texas, is, you know, the California Speedway, all these racetracks open. And that's great. I got no problem with that at all. But they started looking at Seattle and started looking at Manhattan and started looking at Staten Island and the Meadowlands and started looking at Denver and all these places. And they were going to take races away from Talladega and Atlanta
yeah.
and Rockingham and all these places. And so you just got to – when they moved the date from Darlington to Labor Day to California, that was the day I was like, they don't know what the hell is going on.
Right.
And they're still paying the price for that with a lot of old school fans. But if you're paying attention, they're righting those wrongs, and then that begins and ends with the guys you're talking about, Steve Phelps, Steve O'Donnell, and everybody that works with him.
Ryan McGee of ESPN, SEC Network, joining us here. He's in Daytona for the Daytona 500. So do you still get the goosebumps when you walk into this place?
The best. Absolute best. It is – I just got a new contract with ESPN, and basically there's language in there that says I have to go to Daytona and Indianapolis. no matter what I'm doing – college football, college hoops, you know, whatever they're sending, Olympics, whatever they're sending me to do, I want to be here in February, and I want to be in Indianapolis, because it is you do this for a long time, right? And you go to a lot of games at a lot of places, and you don't lose the magic, but it's certainly not what it was with the first few times you went there. Never gets old here. It never gets old here, ever. It's one of my favorite days of the year. Everyone's in the best mood ever. And everybody's fans of other sports, like, why in the world would they run their biggest race to start the year? I think it's perfect.
It's awesome.
Everybody's at zero. Everybody's in a great mood. Everybody's uniforms are brand new. The cars are brand new. We get to week two and week 32, fine. Be beat up in a bad mood. But in Daytona, man, everybody's in the best mood. It's the best. I tell everybody, I don't care what – if you don't care a thing about cars, racing, whatever, you have to come to this if you consider yourself not just a sports fan but, you know, American.
Yeah, it's kind of like back to school, too. You know, like I was walking around seeing people that, you know, I had the opportunity to go to Phoenix.
Yeah,
so it
absolutely.
Was cool to be able to do, you know, the last two points races.
Yeah.
But it's like everybody, like you said, is just smiling in a good mood. The drivers are.
Yeah.
I think they're curious about this new car and how it's going to go. What have you thought about it so far?
I think it looks great.
Yeah, sounds awesome.
It sounds amazing. I think that the learning curve, I wrote a story about this for ESPN.com on Thursday. What's weird is when you go to the race shops, and over the last few weeks, I live in Charlotte, so I've been to Hendrick and Penske and Gibbs, all these places. The shop's like quiet, and there's like two cars sitting there, whereas normally there'd be 30 of them. They'd already be building cars for races that were 3 months down the road. And to the point that at Hendrick, they actually went and got some old cars and put them on the shop floor just to make it look normal because it was messing with people's, you know, equilibrium. So once the supply chain thing straightens itself out, and from what all the guys are telling me, this is going to be really hard until about May.
May
is when they think they're going to get their feet underneath them. But the cars themselves look great. And you know, I know Joe Logano didn't want to wreck in the duels on Thursday night, but – that was a crash test that we needed to see.
Yep.
And he said that. I don't want to be the guy. And he said, I feel fine. Car looks good. I mean, you know, those things are tanks.
Right.
But they're also super safe. So I think there's a I like them a lot. And I'm all for cutting costs. You know, you go to these places, what you don't want is just to become Formula One. And that's kind of what was starting to happen with the race teams. They're spending so much money that, you know, it isn't bad for the sport for Michael McDowell to win a race. You know? And so when you create a playing field where they can win, it's why we love March Madness, you know, because, you know, Iona can win a game. Norfolk State can win a game. And so you need to create a world where those guys can compete. And call it a kit car, call it whatever you want. It looks cool. It sounds cool. It's easy to build, and I think it's gonna you know, close that gap at least a little bit.
Hey, do not go anywhere. We have much more with Ryan McGee from ESPN. He'll be back with us in just a few here on Chasing Checkers, special edition brought to you by Social Furniture and Backyard Blues Pools, ESPN 102.5 The Game, Game Nashville app. We're back here on Chasing Checkers on ESPN 102.5 The Game. We are live at the Daytona International Speedway. It is a beautiful day here at Daytona. Appreciate Social Furniture and Backyard Blues Pools for helping out with our coverage this week. Ryan McGee from ESPN. You bring up the safety, and it's ironic to talk about that 21 years ago today.
Yep.
We lost Dale Earnhardt, and he wasn't the only one.
Nope.
Kenny Irwin, Adam Petty,
the
I mean, there were way too many,
yep.
One too many.
Yep.
But we all know that taking the biggest star in the sport and him losing his life right here really started to make some things happen. And it's hard to believe that you've now had three generations of race car because of safety, really,
right.
Come through in the last 21 years. Car of tomorrow looked awful. People didn't like it.
It was necessary.
Yep. It was the right step. And then you go to the Gen 6 and now the next gen car. It's just crazy to think about how far we've come in 21 years.
Yeah. I mean, and you know this, a year ago, man, this was my life because it was the 20th anniversary. We had a big E60 documentary.
Fantastic.
I appreciate it. And I had a four-part series I did for ESPN.com that was 20,000 words. I mean, the most you'll ever write without a book deal. And going back and reliving all that, and I worked on that thing for months and months and months, a year on the documentary. And, you know, I almost quit. Man, I was in my 20s, and I was right out of school, and all my friends that worked in the business at ESPN, they were going to baseball games and football games and no funerals. I was going to funerals all the time.
Yeah.
Adam Petty was a friend of mine. Kenny Irwin was a friend of mine. I knew Dale Earnhardt. You know, not only that, it was in open wheel racing too. You know,
yeah.
I knew Greg Moore. I knew all these guys. Krosnoff. I knew all those guys. And drag racing. I mean, it all was happening to dirt guys, killing dirt guys left and right.
Right.
And it was just, let's just keep doing it the way we've always done it. Again, I go to my football people all the time, and I say, you know, if you don't get aggressive with the helmets and with the pads, and I don't care how cool it looks or it doesn't look, you'll get used to that. Literally, the only reason these guys wouldn't put on the Hans device was they didn't like it. It felt uncomfortable, and it looked nerdy. That's
right.
Kind of it. I mean, Dale Jr. said that in our E60 piece. So, yeah, you think about back when I was literally – I wanted to quit. I remember coming – I came home. I told my wife, I said, I can't do this anymore because I'm just – I was every race I felt like I was going to, somewhere I was dying. And then it's been – Since February 18th, 2001, no one's died in a NASCAR National Series.
Yeah.
It's the craziest thing to me, and it's the greatest blessing. And I tell you, when we thought Ryan Newman was dead here a couple years ago, there was a feeling. I was in Victory Lane, and I looked around, and you could kind of draw a dividing line between those of us that had lived through all that in the 90s and early 2000s and the people who hadn't.
Yeah.
Because they didn't know what to do. And the rest of us kind of had that muscle memory we didn't want to have. All right, let's go to the hospital. You know, let's prepare our obituaries. It's just kind of how we did it all the time back then. So anybody that talks about the good old days, you can have that because I don't miss that at all.
Yeah, you bring up the Newman thing because I remember – I wasn't down here, but I remember having the same feeling of like –
And it had been a while.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, and it was like because, you know, at our station, I'm the NASCAR guy, and so everybody's texting me, hey, like, when are they announcing?
Right.
Like, he didn't make it,
right?
Yep. Like, you know, because they're – covering the car and all that stuff. And so I'm having that mental preparation and going back to 2001. And obviously I was a young kid in 2001, but it was that same feeling. And then when you see that picture of him walking out 2 days later, holding his daughter's hands, it goes, Dale's up there smiling.
Yeah.
They're all smiling because unfortunately they're not here to see it, but all that hard work has paid off.
The sacrifice of Dale Earnhardt, it had to happen.
Mm-hmm.
For everyone to finally do what they were supposed to do.
Yeah.
And NASCAR loves to tell you that, oh, we were already working on an R&D center. They were, but safety wasn't really what they were working on. They were working on making cars faster.
Right.
And so the focus of all that shifted. So, I think about it all the time, man. And again, I told my daughter, so this is my 27th consecutive speed weeks. And I was leaving the house Wednesday, and my daughter said to me, she goes, all right, so what have you learned about, you know, being down there so much. I said, what I've learned is wisdom has nothing to do with being smart. Wisdom is about you're just still around, right?
Yeah.
And so those of us who knew Dale Earnhardt are way outnumbered now by the people who didn't. And anybody that anybody that takes for granted what's going on now, they weren't around back then. But that sacrifice had to happen.
Yeah.
As horrible as that sounds, it had to happen. And as a result, we haven't lost anybody since. And that's not how Dale Earnhardt wants to be remembered.
No.
Dale Jr. and I have had that conversation 100 times. Dale Jr. doesn't want to be remembered as the guy that made everyone aware of brain injuries and concussions. I told him, I said, dude, that's at least 50% of your legacy. And so it's the same for his dad.
Dale Jr. a Hall of Famer now.
Yeah.
How about
which
that? Is pretty cool.
That's awesome. Yeah.
That and well-deserved. I mean, people – you have to look beyond – you won a lot of races, for one, but you have to look beyond just what you did on the racetrack. It's bringing new notoriety to the sport, what he did in the Xfinity Series, ownership, being that guy that when Dale Jr. speaks, everybody listens. It's kind of like his dad used to do back in the day in the garage area.
I tell everybody, Benny Parsons was my hero. I wouldn't work at ESPN if it wasn't for Benny Parsons. Benny Parsons is from Richmond County, North Carolina, mm-hmm. Rockingham. I've known Benny my entire life. Benny won, 18 races?
Mm-hmm.
He won a Daytona 500, and he won a championship. Dale Earnhardt won twice that many races. Won a couple of Daytona 500s. And no one questions Benny being in the Hall of Fame.
Right.
And it's always, it's what he did when he was done driving. You know, what he did had way more impact. Dale Earnhardt Jr.'s impact off the racetrack, and then what he's done since he joined NBC, it's immeasurable. It really is. And so that's the part of it, too. But I don't have it in front of me. When Dale Jr. retired, I wrote that. I went and looked it up, and I figured out how many, 1,500 people, whatever it was, that had raced in the Cup Series at that point, or a couple thousand. And of all those couple of thousand, there were 25 guys that had won, X number of races. And Dale Jr. was on the list.
Yeah.
That's a Hall of Famer. It is.
No doubt.
By any measure. So, it was great. And I can tell you this. Man, he had a great party that Saturday night. The Hall of Fame thing was on Friday, and I didn't go because I was out of town. But then Saturday night he had a party, and we'll never tell the story about it. I'm not even sure how I got home.
Was Tim Duggar there?
Tim Duggar was there.
That's all I needed.
And Dwight Yoakam. I was standing next to Tim Duggar, and the big surprise was someone was going to perform, and Dwight Yoakam came out there and Tim Duggar screamed like those girls you see in the old Beatles movies. It was the coolest. It was a good night. My wife's still mad at me about that night.
as we wrap this up, Ryan, with Dale Jr. in the Hall of Fame, I feel like for a lot of his career, he was – it's not that he was running from the shadow.
Yeah.
But he felt like he had to live up to it.
Right.
Do you feel like now, post-driving, he's more or less accepted it, embraced it, and used it to his advantage and the sport's advantage?
There is no question about it, and he would be – he's told me that. I mean, he would tell you that if he was sitting here. There's I wrote a book with him about his mm-hmm. concussions, and I keep telling him, we need to write the other one now. We need to write the one about your daddy. And it's and there's no question that he's accepted it. It comes with being older. It comes with being a dad now with two girls. It comes with being married. And Amy Earnhardt is one of my favorite people on planet Earth. She doesn't get the credit that she deserves. And so it's there's no question he's embraced it. And he's learned how to live with it. And if you know the story, and you know that he didn't really know his dad until he was forced to move into the house with him when his mother's house burned down.
Right.
And then they sent him off to military school. I mean, it wasn't – their relationship – was just literally starting to get close in the weeks leading up to the first time that Dale Jr. remembers his dad walking over to him on the grid before the race and going, hey, man, go get him. Good luck. We're going to kick their butt. It was this race on February 18, 2001. So
Dale had the plan.
He had the plan. And it was but they were just getting there. Right. They were just getting. And part of that was Dale Sr. Dale Sr. was just starting to understand what it was like to be a dad and what it was like to be, just to be a granddad, to be all these things. And so it was, it's part of that tragedy. But, Dale Jr.'s the kid everybody thinks they know with the hat backwards and all that stuff, he's still in there, but that's not who he is anymore.
He's a little different. Ryan,
we all are.
I always love these conversations because we're not talking about, okay, who's going to win the race on Sunday. Yeah. We just have these philosophical where the sport is.
You know what? It's because we love it.
Yeah.
And I've always known that about you, and that's why – you know the deal, man. We all do these interviews and stuff, and I love doing them. But but I can tell him. The first time you and I had a conversation live on the radio,
yeah.
I was like, all right, this dude is a dude. So that's why this happens.
Yeah, I appreciate it.
Yeah,
good to see you as always.
Yeah.
And by the way, I wanted to bring this up. The Bubba E60 piece,
yeah.
Bubba Wallace,
yeah.
Also fantastic.
Thank you, man.
I mean,
that.
His story is awesome. And you know, I didn't know all the stuff about he and his dad,
yep.
And the rift there, and I know that had to be tough,
yep.
To sit there and ask those questions.
Well, and what you know this, and what a gift it is that someone like Bubba trusts you enough to be open with you,
yeah,
and is comfortable enough. You know, when we sat down, that was supposed to be a 30-minute interview. We talked for 3 hours.
I believe it.
And he's a good dude.
He is.
And anyone who tells you he's not has never met him. They whatever they read on Twitter is what they're rolling with, or they just don't like him for reasons that we're not going to get into.
Yeah.
That's a good dude right there. And anybody that he's just a good old boy from Morrison. And he is. Born in Mobile, loves the Vols, you know, and so it's he's just a good dude. So anybody that tells you that he's not, they're either lying to you or they've never met him.
Yeah. Yeah, no, because every time I've interviewed him, he's been great.
And all he is open
yep.
to a fault.
Yep.
And you know, I'm glad we got our documentary out there first, but I'm excited to see this Netflix show.
Yeah, yep. Me too. Yep. Me too. Ryan, always a pleasure. Thanks for doing it. We'll do it again soon.
You're the man.
All right, that's going to do it for this Saturday edition of Chasing Checkers, but don't you worry. Coming up tomorrow at 8 o'clock, we will have more coverage here from the Daytona International Speedway. It is all brought to you by Social Furniture on Charlotte Avenue, Shop Local, Shop Social, and Backyard Blues Pools. Special thanks to everybody that stopped by our broadcast location today. Clay Greenfield, Ryan McGee, Steve Post. Steve going to join us again tomorrow, actually, so it'll be cool to talk to him. And we have more guests, including Eric Moses of the Nashville Super Speedway, the Thunderbirds from the Air Force. They're going to stop by, so looking forward to talking to them. Stick around. More coming here on ESPN 102.5 The Game and The Game Nashville app.